Hello, everyone. We're continuing on with Thomas Watson on the Ten Commandments. We're in the introduction still, and in section three, which is the preface to the commandments, and we're picking up where we left off last time. He's going through the words of the I am the Lord thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt. We did I am the Lord thy God. And now we're on to the next set of words. So here we go. Number two, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt. Egypt and the house of bondage are the same, only they are represented to us under different expressions. The first expression is, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt. Question, why does the Lord mention the deliverance of Israel out of Egypt? Number one, because of the strangeness of the deliverance. God delivered his people Israel by strange signs and wonders, by sending plague after plague upon Pharaoh, blasting the fruits of the earth, and killing all the firstborn in Egypt, Exodus 12:29. When Israel marched out of Egypt, God made the waters of the sea to part and become a wall to his people while they went on dry ground. And he made the same sea a causeway to Israel and a grave to Pharaoh and his chariots. Well might the Lord make mention of this strange deliverance. He wrought miracle upon miracle for the deliverance of that people. Number two, God mentions Israel's deliverance out of Egypt because of the greatness of the deliverance. He delivered Israel from the pollutions of Egypt. Egypt was a bad air to live in. It was infected with idolatry. The Egyptians were gross idolaters. They were guilty of that which the apostle speaks of in Romans 1:23. They changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man, into birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. The Egyptians, instead of the true God, worshipped corruptible man. They deified their king, Apis, forbidding all, under pain of death, to say that he was a man. They worshipped birds as the hawk. They worshipped beasts as the ox. They made the image of a beast to be their god. They worshipped creeping things as the crocodile and the Indian mouse. God mentions it, therefore, as a signal favor to Israel that he brought them out of such an idolatrous country. I brought thee out of the land of Egypt. The thing I would note is that it is no small blessing to be delivered from places of idolatry. God speaks of it no less than 10 times in the Old Testament. I brought thee out of the land of Egypt, an idolatrous place. Had there been no iron furnace in Egypt, yet so many altars being there, and false gods, it was a great privilege to Israel to be delivered out of Egypt. Joshua reckons it among the chief and most memorable mercies of God to Abraham that he brought him out of Ur of the Chaldees, where Abraham's ancestors served strange gods. Joshua 24:2 and 3. It is well for the plant that it is set in bad soil to be transplanted to a better, where it may grow and flourish. So it is a mercy when any who are planted among idolaters are removed and transplanted into Zion, where the silver drops of God's word make them grow in holiness. Question, where does it appear to be so great a blessing to be delivered from places of idolatry? Number one, it is a great mercy because our nature is prone to idolatry. Israel began to be defiled with the idols of Egypt, Ezekiel 22:3. Dry wood is not more prone to take fire than our nature is to idolatry. The Jews made cakes to the queen of heaven, that is, to the moon, Jeremiah 7:18. Question, why is it that we are prone to idolatry? Answer, because we are led much by visible objects and love to have our senses pleased. Men naturally fancy a god that they may see, though it be such a god that cannot see them, yet they would see it. The true God is invisible, which makes the idolater worship something that he can see. Number two, it is a mercy because our nature is prone to idolatry. And number two, it is a mercy to be delivered from idolatrous places because of the greatness of the sin of idolatry, which is giving that glory to an image which is due to God. All divine worship God appropriates to himself. It is a flower of his crown. The fat of the sacrifice is claimed by him, Leviticus 3, verse 3. Divine worship is the fat of the sacrifice which he reserves for himself. The idolater devotes this worship to an idol, which the Lord will by no means endure. My glory will I not give to another, neither my praise to graven images. Isaiah 42, verse 8. Idolatry is spiritual adultery. With their idols have they committed adultery, Ezekiel 23, verse 37. To worship any other than God is to break wedlock and makes the Lord disclaim his interest in a people. Plead with your mother, plead, for she is not my wife, Hosea 2, 2. Thy people have corrupted themselves. No more my people, but thy people, Exodus 32, verse 7. God calls idolatry blasphemy. In this your fathers have blasphemed me. Idolatry is devil worship. Ezekiel 20, 27 to 31. They sacrificed unto devils, not to God, to new gods. Deuteronomy 32, 17. These new gods were old devils. And they shall no more offer their sacrifices unto devils. Leviticus 17, 7. The Hebrew word Laseirim is the hairy ones, because the devils were hairy and appeared in the form of satyrs and goats. How dreadful a sin is idolatry, and what a signal mercy is it to be snatched out of the idolatrous place, as Lot was snatched by the angels out of Sodom. Number three, it is a mercy to be delivered out of idolatrous places, because idolatry is such a silly and irrational religion. I may say, as Jeremiah 8, verse 9, what wisdom is in them? Is it not folly to refuse the best and choose the worst? The trees in the field of Jotham's parable despised the vine tree, which cheers both God and man, and the olive, which is full of fatness, and the fig tree, which is full of sweetness, and chose the bramble to reign over them, which was a foolish choice. Judges 9. So it is for to refusing the living God, who has power to save us, and to make choice of an idol that has eyes and sees not, feet but walks not. Psalm 115, 6 and 7. What a prodigy of madness is this! Therefore, to be delivered from committing such folly is a mercy. Number four, it is a mercy to be delivered from idolatrous places, because of the sad judgments inflicted upon idolaters. This is a sin which enrages God and makes the fury come up in his face. Ezekiel 38:18. Search through the whole book of God, and you shall find no sin he has followed with more plagues than idolatry. Their sorrows shall be multiplied that hasten after another God. Psalm 16, verse 4. They moved him to jealousy with their graven images. Psalm 78, verse 58. When God heard this, he was wroth and greatly abhorred Israel, so that he forsook the tabernacle of Shiloh. Same chapter, verses 59 and 60. Shiloh was a city belonging to the tribe of Ephraim, where God set his name. Jeremiah 7, verse 12. But for their idolatry, God forsook the place, gave his people up to the sword, caused his priests to be slain, and his ark to be carried away captive, never more to be returned. How severe was God against Israel for worshiping the golden calf? Exodus 32:27. The Jews say that in every misery that befalls them, there is an ounce of the golden calf in it. Come out of her, my people, that ye may be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. Revelation 18:4. Idolatry lived in cuts men off from heaven. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 9. So then it is no small mercy to be delivered out of idolatrous places. Use number one, see the goodness of God to our nation in bringing us out of mystic Egypt, delivering us from popery, which is Romish idolatry, and causing the light of his truth to break forth gloriously among us. In former times, and more lately, in the Marian days, England was overspread with idolatry. It worshipped God after a false manner, and it is idolatry not only to worship a false God, but the true God in a false manner. Such was our case formerly. We had purgatory, indulgences, the idolatrous mass, the scriptures locked up in an unknown tongue, invocation of saints and angels or prayer to them, and image worship. Images are teachers of lies, Habakkuk 2:18. Wherein do they teach lies? They represent God who cannot be seen in a bodily shape. Ye saw no similitude, only ye heard a voice, Deuteronomy 4:12. God cannot be pictured by any finger or the hand of man who would create an image, not the soul even being a spirit, much less God. So you can't even make a picture of a soul. So then how could you possibly make a picture of God? To whom then will ye liken God? Isaiah 40 verse 18. The papists say they worship God by the image, which is a great absurdity, for if it be absurd to fall down to the picture of a king when the king himself is present, much more to bow down to the image of God when God himself is present. Jeremiah 23:24. What is the popish religion but a bundle of ridiculous ceremonies? Their wax, flowers, pikes, Agnes Dei, cream and oil, beads, crucifixes. What are these but Satan's policy to dress up carnal worship fitted to carnal minds? Oh, what cause have we to bless God for delivering us from popery? It was a mercy to be delivered from the Spanish invasion and the powder treason, but it is a far greater to be delivered from the popish religion, which would have made God give us a bill of divorce. Use number two. If it be a great blessing to be delivered from the Egypt of popish idolatry, it shows the sin and folly of those who, being brought out of Egypt, are willing to return to it again. The apostle says, flee from idolatry, 1 Corinthians 10:14. But these rather flee to idolatry and are herein like the people of Israel, who, notwithstanding all the idolatry and tyranny of Egypt, long to go back to Egypt. Let us make a captain and let us return into Egypt, Numbers 14, verse 4. But how shall they go back to Egypt? How shall they have food in the wilderness? Will God rain down manna any more upon such rebels? How will they get over the Red Sea if they wanted to go back? Will God divide the water again by miracle for such as leave his service and go into idolatrous worship, Egypt? Yet they say, let us make a captain. And are there not such spirits among us who say, let us make a captain and go back to the Romish Egypt again? If we do, what shall we get by it? I am afraid the leeks and onions of Egypt will make us sick. Do we ever suppose that if we drink of the cup of fornication, we shall drink of the cup of salvation? Oh, that any should so forfeit their reason as to enslave themselves to the Sea of Rome, S-E-E. That they should be willing to hold a candle to the mass priest and bow down to a strange god. Let us not say we will make a captain, but rather say as Ephraim, what have I to do any more with idols? Hosea 14, verse 8. Use number three. If it be a mercy to be brought out of Egypt, it is not desirable or safe to plant one's self in an idolatrous place, where it may be a capital crime to be seen with a Bible in our hands. Some, for secular gain, thrust themselves among idolaters and think there is no danger to live where Satan's seat is. They pray God would not lead them into temptation, but lead themselves. They are in great danger of being polluted. It is hard to be as the fish which keeps fresh in salt waters. A man cannot dwell among the blackamoors, but he will be discolored. You will sooner be corrupted by idolaters than they will be converted by you. Joseph got no good by living in an idolatrous court. He did not teach Pharaoh to pray, but Pharaoh taught him to swear. They were mingled among the heathen and served their idols. Psalm 106, 35, 30, and 36. I fear it has been the undoing of many, that they have seated themselves amongst idolaters for advancing their trade, and at last have not only traded with them in their commodities, but in their religion. Use number 4, it is a mercy to be brought out of the land of Egypt, a defiled place, and where sin reigns. It reproaches such parents as show little love for the souls of their children, whether it be in putting them out to service or matching them. In putting them out to service, their care is chiefly for their bodies that they may be provided for, and they care not what happens of their souls. Their souls are in Egypt, in houses where there is drinking, swearing, Sabbath breaking, and where God's name is every day dishonored. In matching their children, they only look at money. So my guess is putting out to service maybe for education or to send them off to work. And then in matching, I think, is marriage here. They look only at money. Be ye not unequally yoked, 2 Corinthians 6:14. If their children be equally yoked for estate, they care not whether they be unequally yoked for religion. Let such parents think how precious the soul of their child is, that it is immortal and capable of communion with God and angels. Will you let a soul be lost by placing it in a bad family? So it's probably in service, allowing your child to go and be a servant somewhere among these households of ungodly people. Will you let a soul be lost by placing it in a bad family? If you had a horse you loved, you would not put him in a stable with other horses that were sick and diseased. And do you not love your child better than your house or your horse? God has entrusted you with the souls of your children. You have a charge of souls. God says in 1 Kings 20:39, keep this man, if he be missing, then shall thy life be for his life. So says God, if the soul of the child miscarry by thy negligence, his blood will I require at thy hand. Think of this, all you parents. Take heed of placing your children in Egypt in a wicked family. Do not put them in the devil's mouth. Seek for them a sober, religious family, such as Joshua's. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Joshua 24:15. Such a family as Cranmer's, which was a nursery of piety, a Bethel, of which it may be said, the church which is in his house. Colossians 4:15. News number 5. Let us pray that God would keep our English nation from the defilements of Egypt, that it may not be again overspread with superstition and idolatry. Oh, sad religion, not only to have our estates, our bodies enslaved, but our consciences. Pray that the true Protestant religion may still flourish among us, that the sun of the gospel may still shine in our horizon. The gospel lifts a people up to heaven. It is the crown and glory of the kingdom. If this be removed, Ichabod, the glory is departed. The top of the beech tree being cut off, the whole body of the tree withers apace. So the gospel is the top of all our blessings. If this top be cut, the whole body politic will soon wither. Oh, pray that the Lord will continue the visible tokens of his presence among us, his ordinances, that England may be called Jehovah Shammah, the Lord is there. Ezekiel 48, verse 35. Pray that righteousness and peace may kiss each other, that so glory may dwell in our land. All right, that's the end of that section, which covers the next part of that verse. I took thee out of the land of Egypt. And Lord willing, we go on to the next part, which is out of the house of bondage. But until then, go in God's truth. And Lord willing, we'll talk to you again soon.